Drum roll, please. Greetings, and welcome to TWERP Online's second annual OscarCast, TWERPcast episode 22. Unlike the Academy, whose opinions are self-important, overinflated, ego-padding from the stars, these opinions are self-important, overrated, ego-padding from the fans. Without further ado, I would like to present the Oscar for worst ever Britney Spears impersonator, Jim Caswell.
And I'm going to introduce Doug Zeitlin, co-executive producer of Timewell Electronic Recording Productions. He would like to extend his thanks to those who hosted the Oscar party he attended last year, and apologizes for the fact that he had confused it for an Academy Awards party rather than the fan gathering of Oscar the Grouch that it was. And the woman in the green fuzz jumpsuit, he wants to stay in touch. As Doug stated, this is the second year that we've done a Oscar cast. Last year we spent a little bit of time going into the history of the Academy Awards and how important they were, and I went on and on about how wonderful they were, and Doug was being his typical anti-establishment self and talking about how little value they had. And not only did he pick the most winners that year, but he was also dead on the mark right about the lack of importance and good taste on the part of the Academy.
Which, if you've seen the Oscar nominees for this year, probably won't surprise you once again that there's a nearly complete lack of taste in their decision-making.
As Doug pointed out in his opening, the Academy Awards is a contest for the snobs by the snobs. Now, I understand that it's not a public award like the People's Choice Awards or the MTV Awards or things of that nature. It is an award system established by people in the industry for people in the industry. I understand this. I somewhat accept it. But they need to come to the realization that the significance of this show drops each and every year. And they should be able to grasp that by just looking at their ratings. Now, we're not big fans of ratings here because it's a flawed system, but this flawed system does mark the fact that the Academies are watched by fewer and fewer people each year. It's the reason why they brought in brand new directors this year. They brought in a brand new host in Hugh Jackman. They've done everything in their power to try to reinvigorate things just to try to get people to come in and watch it. When we look at the selections that they've made for Best Picture and Best Director, it becomes quite clear that the choices have no bearing on what the common person has enjoyed. It was stuff that either got a limited release and therefore was barely seen by anyone at all, or it was released in wide release and nobody cared to watch it in the first bloody place. So it's hard for the common people to connect with a show about movies that they haven't seen and don't care to see.
As you said, this is not the People's Choice Award. This is the award presented by Academy members for Academy members. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about this. So it really doesn't matter to them who's seen it or where the public standing is. It's not what the most popular movie is. Otherwise, every year you'd be ending up with things like Transformers, Oscar Picture of the Year, in which case that would be an equal mistake. However, the movies which are picked for nomination and for the Oscar itself are really done more on popularity than they are on actual need. And this has happened for many, many years. It's not something that's new. You get somebody like Robin Williams, who was absolutely marvelous in Good Morning Vietnam, and he's got to wait his turn because it wasn't his time to win the Oscar. So he gets the Oscar for a terrible little performance in Good Will Hunting. I mean, it was like, okay, it's payback.
We didn't want to give it to you here, so we'll give it to you over here. John Wayne is another fantastic example of this. He did dozens of movies long before he was nominated for True Grit. He even got an Oscar nomination for The Sands of Iwo Jima, but they waited until they thought it was his last movie because he had been diagnosed with cancer and everybody thought that True Grit was going to be his last movie. Then they gave it to him more as a Lifetime Achievement Award than an actual Oscar. And then, as it turned out, he ended up doing one more movie on top of that.
I expect we're going to see this again this year. We have somebody in the Best Actor category who's been overlooked for many, many years in the Oscars. And even though the movie was a piece of dog shite, I'm pretty sure he's going to get it.
I know that I'm not the only person that was deeply frustrated and offended by the Academy's lack of notice of The Dark Knight. It didn't get nominated for Best Picture or for Best Director, Of the top six awards, it only got nominated for Best Supporting Actor, and that is a very warranted nomination. Don't get me wrong. Heath Ledger did an outstanding performance as the Joker, but that doesn't make up for the fact that it really was the best picture of 2008, and Christopher Nolan put together an awesome story on the screen. It was critically acclaimed, it was viewer acclaimed, it was the highest grossing picture in a decade, and the second highest grossing of all time, and it was 10 times better, in my opinion, than Titanic, which is not only the number one grossing film, but it also won the Academy Award for Best Picture and Best Director in 1997.
Genre films in and of themselves don't make the Academy list. Doesn't matter whether you're science fiction, fantasy, superhero, mystery, romance. I mean, when was the last time you saw a romantic comedy up for Best Picture? They call it, you know, the Academy Awards, but realistically, it's the Academy's Drama Awards and a few others.
Now, don't get us wrong. There have been a few exceptions, and we acknowledge them. Star Wars was nominated, but it didn't win. The third Lord of the Rings film, Return of the King, won, but again, we're kind of talking in that same line as a Lifetime Achievement Award. You put together three fantastic movies that together earned trillions of dollars, you gotta kind of throw them a bone.
You know, it comes sometimes justified. Steven Spielberg, despite his standings as probably 10 of the top 20 grossing movies of all time, the one he got the Academy Award for was Schindler's List.
If you look at audience popularity versus Academy popularity, they're at two very different ends of the spectrum.
It's not the MTV Movie Awards, it's not the People's Choice Awards, it's the Academy Awards. And it's their small group of people. Honestly, I don't have a problem with that. I just think that they do it more as a popularity contest rather than people who really deserve it.
And there have been some really fantastic science fiction movies and fantasy movies and superhero movies that should have gotten a nod and were
and
ignored.
Action movies and romantic comedies. It's not what the Academy is looking for.
And for an industry that prides itself on its open-mindedness and for being very, very liberal, they're very closed-minded about what they consider should be Oscar-worthy. So, I feel much better now. Let's move on to the actual nominees of 2008. Because as much as we just griped and complained about the Academy, it still is considered a standard setter of the industry. So we can't just say, on you. We have to at least acknowledge it.
That being said, there are very good movies that are nominated this year. Not everything that was nominated automatically was a piece of dog shit. There were many, though.
Just about 20%.
The Best Picture and Best Director, I think we can do this together, because they're the same 5 for 5 movies.
And the percentages do put it at, the movie that wins Best Director usually wins Best Picture. There are a few exceptions, but not many.
Given that 20% ratio, which you discussed before, I would like to start with what I consider the 20% that I'd like to scrape off the bottom of my shoe before continuing with this podcast. That would be Stephen Daltrey's The Reader.
I cannot agree with you more. That movie fell into the category of, how can I get that 2 hours of my life back again?
And I want my pound of flesh from Stephen Daltrey also.
Kate Winslet gave that up.
You know, I don't even know what to say. It's a movie that's done in 3 acts in 3 different time periods. And about the middle half hour of the movie is this really marvelous morality play, emotional roller coaster that's actually really decent. It's the reason why this movie is being considered at all, because there is an emotional tug on you during this 30 minutes. I thought Kate Winslet was marvelous for what she had. I don't necessarily think that the script was that great. I thought it was really pretty hollow, to be honest with you.
The segues between the eras was utterly confusing. Thank goodness that they had 2 different actors portraying the different lives of the lead character. Otherwise, I would never have understood what one time frame was and what the next time frame was, especially at the very beginning when Ralph Fiennes was looking out the window and it looked as though he was looking at his younger self riding on the subway, which if they were going for surreal, they probably made it, but surreal also equals confusing oftentimes.
More so than just confusing or bad storytelling. I mean, this was definitely a drama by no stretch of the imagination. But here's something that did not delve into character motivation. It did not delve into any sort of character growth. You don't know why anybody does anything in this movie. It's totally voyeuristic. You're just watching moments of these people's lives, not getting to understand why they're in these moments.
So I think we can pretty much wrap this up by just saying this movie stank. There are no pens in the pen protector because that one leaked all over. Something that we're going to institute this year, we're going to make two picks. We're going to guess the one that we believe the Academy is going to name, and we're going to pick the one that we believe should win. For scoring purposes, we'll count the one that we think the Academy is going to pick, because that's the actual guessing aspect of things. But I have a feeling that there's going to be several occasions where we are not going to agree with the Academy, and that's kind of what clogged up my guesses last year, was I was actually naming the ones that I thought should win.
You should never do that.
So, that being said, we have four other films. Frost Nixon, directed by Ron Howard. The Curious Case of Benjamin Button, directed by David Fincher. Milk, directed by Gus Van Sant. And Slumdog Millionaire, directed by Danny Boyle.
I think I can safely say that the one of the remaining movies that neither of us have picked is going to be Gus Van Sant and Milk. Am I correct?
You are correct.
I thought this was a good movie. I can understand why this would get picked for an Oscar nomination. I didn't think there was a bad thing in this movie. I was really impressed with Sean Penn, and after all the years of seeing Sean Penn, this is the first time I've actually noticed that, wow, he can actually act.
That's because I think this was the first year he actually did act.
Gosh, everybody that was in this, Josh Brolin, Emile Hirsch, you just name it, I thought this was just full of really, really amazing performances.
James Franco should have been nominated for Best Supporting Actor well before Josh Brolin was.
My sole problem with this whole movie, and this may be nothing, is the fact that the movie's called Milk, and to me, that would say that it's really about the life and times of Harvey Milk. And the movie integrated the story of the gay rights movement with the story of Harvey Milk in such a way that they became inseparable. Kind of saying, well, there would have been no gay rights movement without Harvey Milk, and without Harvey Milk, there could have been no gay rights movement. And I'm not sure that that's necessarily true. I think they're certainly interweaved. I can understand that. But I think there was more to Harvey Milk than just being the head of the gay rights movement. If you took the gay rights movement, that his story would go away. And I don't think that's true. I think that he lived a full and a wonderful life. And to say that without the gay rights movement, he's just another gay politician, it seemed to take something away, just a little bit. But by no means saying that this is a bad movie. I just think that it was kind of unfair to Harvey Milk.
I completely agree with you, but the downside for me was actually the fact that this was a movie with an agenda. And from the very beginning, they hit you over the head with the agenda, they kept on hitting you with the agenda, and till the very end, you knew this was the agenda. And it's purely a personal point of view. I probably would not have watched this film if it wasn't for the fact that it was an Oscar nominee and we were going to be doing this show. That being said, I in no way, shape, or form regret having seen it like I do with The Reader.
You know, I guess if I go into a film knowing that there's an agenda, I don't care. Movies with agendas are just something that's commonplace. But that leaves us three more movies and three more directors.
Let's go with who you think deserves to win.
Ron Howard and Frost Nixon, without a shadow of a doubt. I was just blown away by this movie. I totally expected to be bored out of my mind. I expected this to be The Reader Reader. Here's a little piece of historical drama from a time period that everybody knows. I could care less about the Frost Nixon interview, to be frank. I mean, it's not something that going into this really interested me. And Ron Howard managed to pull me into the lives of these people and make this such an interesting piece of storytelling that my jaw drops. Even though it's not an action adventure, I found myself on the edge of my chair for the whole movie.
Frost Nixon was another one of those films that if it hadn't been nominated for the Academy Award, I probably would not have watched it. It was a good piece of cinematic work. In a lot of ways, I kind of felt the same as far as character development as with The Reader. I didn't feel like they gave us a whole lot of character development. They walked in assuming we knew who these people were, assuming that we'd easily identify with what was going on in their lives at that particular point in time, didn't really give us a whole lot of background. Now, fortunately, I did know who Nixon was. Didn't really know who Frost was. didn't really get a good idea of who he was even through the movie, other than the fact that he thought this might be a lark, and that as things progressed, things were getting more and more desperate for him. But as to who he was before or who he was after, there really wasn't a good image as to what was going on with him. Like you said, the bracket of time from the beginning of the movie till the end of the movie was a very good story.
The acting was phenomenal. I loved Kevin Bacon. I loved Frank Langella. Here was just a collection of performances that were all perfect in their own right and put together just so well. I don't think that Ron, as a director, took sides. He did not make Richard Nixon out to be the bad guy. He made him out to be a president who made a mistake. But I don't think that Nixon was portrayed as bad. I don't think he was portrayed as stupid. He was just portrayed as a person.
He wasn't portrayed in the way that Hollywood normally portrays him. When watching Frost Nixon, you were able to look at Richard Nixon and say, okay, I can understand why he was the leader of the free world for the length of time that he was.
At the same time, it lets you draw your own conclusions. I mean, you know, as audience members, what happened. So you still can decide, okay, was it moral, was it immoral? He doesn't draw that conclusion for you. The little portion that I loved, and it was not overly big, and it's not crammed down your throat, but it's also a modern allegory for what's been going on in the Iraq War.
If I was the Academy and I had my way, I would actually give it to The Curious Case of Benjamin Button and David Fincher. I thought that it was a very unique story. I thought it was very well told. I had a couple of issues towards the end of the movie, but that's my own psychological hang-ups, and I have to deal with those. But for telling a story that was unique and hadn't really been seen before in a new way, it struck me as a very good film. There were times in it where I was kind of reminded of Forrest Gump, but I won't hold that against it.
This, I have to say, is probably the most artistic of the movies of the year. It was just a beautifully shot, well-told, a fun, fun, fun movie. And if I didn't mention it, it was fun. There is an agenda to this film. As far as I read it, anyways, the agenda was live life to its fullest every day. The theme was youth is wasted on the young. So if when you're old, you have the body of the youth, you can actually do those things that now you'd be like, boy, if only I had it to do over again. So it's saying, don't wait till you have to say, I wish I could do it over again. Do it now.
So you would like to see Frost Nixon get the award. I'd like to see Curious Case of Benjamin Button get the award. So it sounds as though we're in agreement as to who we think will get the award.
It seems that way for a change.
Let's hear your reason why you think Slumdog Millionaire is going to win the Oscar.
I think it's Danny Boyle's year.
I will agree with that, and I will trumpet with the Directors Guild of America picked it as the best picture of the year. The Directors Guild, in all of the years that they've been giving out their awards, they haven't matched up with the Academy only twice. So pretty much betting with the Directors Guild of America is an extremely safe bet.
It's an enjoyable movie. It's a little fairy tale about a guy who comes from nothing and ends up with everything. He has the money, he has the girl, he's got the fame. I mean, it's that traditional Hollywood movie with a happy ending.
Up until the point where we saw The Curious Case of Benjamin Button, this was my favorite movie of the Oscar picks, which completely shocked me, because one of the key elements of the film is the god-awful game show Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? I have to accept the fact that Millionaire was a defining moment in the history of television. That doesn't mean I have to like it. For it to be a centerpiece of a film was a bit disconcerting for me. That being said, I still managed to enjoy this film. In fact, this film had a lot of things that normally I wouldn't have enjoyed in a film, and I liked it anyway. And that's what impressed me so much.
You know, I didn't see anything in this movie that I'd say I didn't like. I thought it was well told. Again, it's one of those movies that's told over multiple time periods. Each character has three different actors to play them. It really does a good job of telling this slumdog's life story and how he went from rags to riches. Acting in it was great. The directing was great. It moves you emotionally. The characters that you're not supposed to like, you hate. The characters that you like, you really want to see them win. It was just really well done.
it had a very Bollywood feel to it, up until the point where I realized who the director was and where he was from and what his motivations were. I thought that this was a Bollywood film. Come to find out, it's a British director and a British writer and a good portion of British actors. I thought this was a Bollywood film.
Well, one of the complaints I've heard about this is that it portrays India as a slum. And just from my own point of view strictly, I didn't see that. I saw that this main character came from a slum, but I never got the impression that it was trying to say India as a whole was a slum.
I felt as though it made it quite clear that, much like every other country in the world, there were different economic classes, and he happened to be from the lowest economic class in the country.
And by the time the movie ended, he had escaped that. And showed that even, like, his brother found a way to escape. It wasn't as happy a story as his, but it showed that there's more than one way to escape from the slums. Every country, doesn't matter where you are, has impoverished areas.
And it wouldn't have had as much impact if he was coming from a middle-class lifestyle to being a millionaire.
This movie could not have been Beverly Hills Millionaire.
Or Naperville Millionaire.
There you go.
So, Best Picture, Slumdog Millionaire. Best Director, Danny Boyle.
Yeah, I think that's the way it's going to go. I'm not upset by that. I mean, I really think that Ron and Frost Nixon deserve it. But I think that Slumdog Millionaire is still an excellent choice.
Unlike some previous years, you're not sitting here going, God, why did that movie win? It's not like if The Reader won. If The Reader won, then we'd be going, ah, what's going on here? Can you pick the worst pile of horse manure available and give it the Oscar? It really is polishing a turd. So, moving on. Best Actor.
Honestly, this one's really tough. I haven't seen The Visitor, but everything I've heard about Richard Jenkins' performance just leads me to believe that it was as marvelous as they're saying. But I thought Frank Langella, Sean Penn, Brad Pitt, and for what it's worth, Mickey Rourke, all did good jobs in their role.
This is actually the best category, in my opinion, because the people who were nominated actually deserved the recognition for the roles that they played. The only change that I could possibly make on this list would have been nominating the guy who played Frost rather than the guy who played Nixon, and giving Frank the Best Supporting Actor nomination.
Yeah, I'd have gone with that. That wouldn't have bothered me at all.
But we play with the hand that's dealt us.
This is really the hardest category, because I'm not a big Brad Pitt fan, I'm not a big Sean Penn fan, but I would accept either of them as Oscar winners this year. They were both marvelous. Frank Langella, anybody who can make Richard Nixon not a hateable person, and actually somebody that you can empathize with, deserved an Oscar.
Okay, so we think anybody could be the winner. Who do you think will be the winner?
My last choice, Mickey Rourke. The Wrestler was a piece of shit movie. I am absolutely amazed by Darren Aronofsky. He's the only man on earth that I realize can actually make professional wrestling boring.
Mickey Rourke really was the only redeemable factor in this film. And that's saying something considering how much I like Marissa Tomei.
Well, she was naked in a good percentage of the movie.
Even that couldn't help. He really was the only redeemable quality in this film. But I don't think he's going to actually win. Again, I'm going to go with the previous award winners because, much like the Directors Guild of America, the Screen Actors Guild of America often matches up quite closely with the Oscars. It almost seems redundant to have all of these awards when they all tend to go to the exact same people. That being said, I think Sean Penn is going to win for Milk. And I think he actually does deserve it, because I think he was the one who was portraying someone the farthest from himself, and therefore truly acting.
I did not see any of Sean Penn in that role. I only saw Harvey Milk the entire time. And if he gets it, it is well deserved. I thought he was absolutely fabulous. And frankly, I hope he gets it over Mickey Rourke. I don't hate Mickey Rourke, but I just have a feeling that it's going to be his year.
Best Actress.
I'm torn about this one also. Not a huge Angelina Jolie fan. I'd kind of like to see her win it just to see it happen.
My biggest fear is Brad Pitt winning Best Actor and Angelina Jolie winning Best Actress and the paparazzi's heads just exploding.
That would be hilarious. I love Anne Hathaway. I don't think she's put in her dues yet. I think that as far as the Academy goes, that she's too much of a fresh name yet.
There have been times where the fresh names do get the nominations, and she has been in Hollywood for almost a decade now.
Oh, I remember Princess Diaries. Didn't watch them, but I remember them.
But I think you're right. She hasn't produced her quote-unquote acting chops enough for the Academy standards yet. We do have a 20%er in this one again, in the form of Kate Winslet from The Reader. And she was actually the winner of the Best Supporting Actress Award from the Screen Actors Guild, which is the one thing that really kind of scares me.
I've got it down to Meryl Streep and Kate Winslet. I think it's going to be Kate Winslet is really where I think it's going to go this year. She did okay. I did not have a problem with her in The Reader. My problem was with the movie itself. So, again, you know, you want to put some polish on it. She was, like, the shiny part of the piece of crap, but it's still polishing crap.
I'm actually going to go in the other direction. I'm going to go with Meryl Streep on this one for doubt. The movie was okay. Again, this was another one of those films with an agenda, and it beat you over the head with the agenda left and right. I didn't particularly like the movie because of the fact that it didn't have enough of a resolution to it for my tastes. But she really did a fantastic job in it, and even though she's won 2 Academy Awards already, I think that this will probably be her third, especially considering how many other times she's been nominated and hasn't won. She is the Susan Lucci of the Academy Awards, so my vote is going to go with Meryl Streep.
Best Supporting Actor is probably the easiest category to call. I don't think there's going to be any doubt in anybody's mind who's taken this award away.
If anyone wins but Heath Ledger, it is a crime. There has been a robbery. The police and the FBI should be notified immediately, and everybody should be taken down.
Yeah, this is a case, I think, where the 20% went to the top person, and then everybody else was like, all right, who are we going to let down gently?
It did definitely have a feel of, we know who's going to win, who do we sacrifice up, because we have to fill the category with 4 other names.
Philip Seymour Hoffman, that's a shame because even though as a previous winner, I mean, he's really good, and I wouldn't mind seeing him get another award.
Yes, he was very good in Doubt. Robert Downey Jr. was okay in Tropic Thunder. I didn't think that he was necessarily Oscar-worthy.
This is, to me, a joke. This is like picking the least popular kid in school to be the homecoming king. First of all, it's Robert Downey Jr., so he's not going to get it. And then for Tropic Thunder, as much as we were complaining about popular movies not getting into the Academy Awards, it's Tropic Thunder.
I guess the thing that's the most offensive about that was the fact that he was no better than the rest of the cast. And it wasn't a bad cast. It was a bad movie, but it wasn't a bad cast. And he wasn't any better than anyone else. His nomination almost feels like a sarcastic dig at the movie, because the movie did a lot of sarcastic digs at the Academy. It's this weird dichotomy that they've got going on between each other that we as viewers are just kind of caught in the middle of.
I mean, Josh Brolin was good in Milk. I can't say that he was bad.
He was good in Milk, but as I said earlier, James Franco was the better supporting actor in that film. Josh Brolin is in the movie for all of 20 minutes, and he gets nominated, whereas James Franco is in it for all but 10.
Yeah, I thought Franco was really good. That's no dig at Josh Brolin. Again, it's popularity. I don't know how to describe it. Brolin has been passed over before, and I think he's going to get passed over again this year. But undoubtedly, he'll get his year as these things work out.
Which brings us down to Best Supporting Actress. This is a tough category, not because all the ladies are so closely matched, but because of the ones that I saw, most of them weren't in the film that long. When I think of a supporting role, I think of someone who adds a significant piece to the telling of the film. And in my opinion, 4 of these 5 women, the role that they played wasn't as pertinent to the story as perhaps someone else in the film, or as much as it should have been. Amy Adams did a very nice job in Doubt, but she was about as important as the school building. She didn't really jump out at me as being someone who this movie could not have lived without. Viola Davis was only in the film for 10 minutes. What are they doing nominating someone who is in an hour and 45 minute film for 10 minutes and saying, this is someone who the film could not have lived without? Marissa Tomei. She's in a lot more of the film, but her performance just was unremarkable.
That goes down to just how bad this movie was. This script, as a rough draft in anybody else's hands, could have been made a lot better. The character played by Marissa Tomei was a linchpin character. She's the one who's supposed to turn Mickey Rourke's life around. She's the one that's supposed to get him back in good favor with his daughter. She's the one that's supposed to say, come on, the wrestling is not as important as your family is. And the character never completes it. It's not Marissa Tomei's fault. It's just the fact that this is a crappy movie. I think had the role been better, that this would be entirely justified.
If it was a better film. She did as much with what she was given as she possibly could. That does not make it an Oscar-worthy performance.
Which I think means that we both feel the same person and should get the award.
Taraji P. Henson played Benjamin Button's adopted mother, and she did a wonderful job of it. She was in the movie long enough to be considered a supporting character. The performance that she gave was wonderful, and I feel as though the part really stretched her acting chops and made her work to provide the best possible performance that she could give.
I think it's a shame that she's actually Best Supporting Actress, because she really could have been given Best Actress for this role. She was just so good. The role was written so well. She did such a marvelous job with it. She really is, in effect, the second most important character in this movie. Benjamin Buttons would not have grown up to be the man he had become without her.
Her character did more to develop the story than Cate Blanchett's character did. That's not slamming Cate Blanchett's performance at all. She did a great job as well. But the impact that she had on Benjamin Button's life was nowhere comparable to the impact that Henson's character had.
I think it's easiest in my mind to diagram it as a piece of English. If Benjamin Button is the baseball, then Taraji is the baseball bat. She's the one that put the force behind the baseball. And that Cate Blanchett was the outfielder who catches the ball. Important to the game of baseball, but the action was the swinging of the bat hitting the ball.
So we are in agreement. Henson should win Best Supporting Actress.
Absolutely, absolutely. She is brilliant.
And seeing that the SAG winner in this category is nominated for Best Actress as opposed to Best Supporting Actress, it's anybody's game.
The final category we're really going to talk about, Best Animated Film, has me kind of thrown for a loop. The three films that are nominated this year are Bolt, Kung Fu Panda, and WALL-E. If you use past history as any example, Pixar wins the Academy Award. It should be called Best Pixar Film, is what it should be called.
I agree. WALL-E is going to take this. Added on top of that, there were a number of people who were outraged that it didn't get a Best Picture nod, especially when you consider things like The Reader is in there. I thought that the preview clip for WALL-E was better than the entire movie of Reader.
It certainly was a lot shorter. And I'm just wondering, is this the year that they're, like, going to throw DreamWorks a bone? Because Kung Fu Panda was actually a pretty good movie. Was not an Oscar-worthy movie, but could this be the year where the Academy pulls a fast one?
The potential is there, but I still think that WALL-E's going to take it. This is a bit of a rarity. We agree on 5 of the 7 categories that we've discussed, and on the 2 that we disagreed on, there wasn't a whole lot of disagreement. It was, do you prefer French fries or mashed potatoes? But we both agreed that both performers gave a good performance, so this is a nice turn of events. To finish things up, we've talked about what the Academy thinks. Let's talk about what we think. What we thought were the best films of the year, and the worst films of the year. For myself, the best pictures had to either meet or exceed my expectations. I don't go out to see everything that comes out. I pick specific movies because I want to see it. I like the concept. In order for it to still be considered a best movie, it has to meet those expectations or exceed them. And this will come as absolutely no surprise. The best picture, in my opinion, was The Dark Knight. It not only met my expectations, it blew them away and set a whole new set of expectations that no movie is going to be able to live up to for quite a while.
It's funny, because strictly using that interpretation, meeting or beating your expectations, would actually mean that Iron Man was the best movie for me this year. Because I expected a pretty mediocre movie and actually got a very fun movie. So it really blew away my expectations. I don't necessarily think it was the best movie of the year. However, strictly using the basis of beating your expectations, that one beat my expectations by the furthest.
Fortunately, $400 million in ticket sales support my belief.
I really enjoyed Batman, but I disagree as far as beating your expectations. I've seen Batman Begins. That was a 4-star movie. That's probably the best superhero movie that I've ever seen, and I fully expected The Dark Knight to be exactly the same quality, and it was. It was an incredible movie. Held my attention for every second. Didn't blow me away. It wasn't better than I expected. It was another 4-star movie.
That's one of those areas that we'll disagree on, because I too saw Batman Begins, and I thought that it was the best superhero movie ever made. And I walked into Dark Knight expecting it to be just as good as Batman Begins, and I thought it was superior. It's one of those rare times where I saw a sequel and went, wow, that was actually better than the first one.
I didn't think it was that much better than the first one. And as much as I want Heath Ledger to get the Academy Award, I think he's getting an extra hype because he passed this year. I thought he did an excellent job, but not that spectacular that everybody's calling it.
Again, I'm going to disagree with you. When I watched The Dark Knight, never in that entire film did I see Heath Ledger on the screen. The entire time, all I saw was the Joker. Even when he didn't have the white clown makeup on, I still looked at him and went, that's not Heath Ledger, that's the Joker. He completely submerged his own personality in exchange for portraying this character. And I think that best supporting actor, best person who has acted within the past year in Hollywood, he's the man.
It's such a good movie that really defines most of the actors. I think Christian Bale disappears as Batman and as Bruce Wayne. Aaron Eckhart as Two-Face. I mean, to say he was the best Two-Faced ever, it doesn't do him justice. I mean, he was spectacular as Two-Face. Actually, the only one that I was mildly disappointed with was Maggie Gyllenhaal, which really surprises me because I think that she's just a fabulous actress. I'm guessing, honestly, it was Christopher Nolan just toning her down.
The fact that everybody was so spectacular seconds the reason why Christopher Nolan should have gotten Best Director.
I'm not going to argue with that.
Now, before this gets to be too much of a love fest for Dark Knight, oops, too late. Are there any other movies that you would consider to be a best worthy?
As far as what I thought were the best movies, as far as these are the ones that deserve to be award winners, the actually two of the nominees was Frost Nixon and Case of Benjamin Buttons. I'm a pretty simple movie goer. Everybody that listens to this knows I like gunfights, explosions, and car chases. Those are my three things. So this was a real easy summer for me for movies. I liked Iron Man, I liked Dark Knight, I liked The Incredible Hulk. They're three incredibly different movies, despite the fact that they're all superhero movies, and I liked them. I did not hate The Spirit as much as most people who have seen it have. There were things I found enjoyable in that.
You didn't dislike it nearly as much as the other two people that were in the room with you. The other movie that I would consider to be my best movie of the year isn't technically a movie. It was a 3-part web show produced by Joss Whedon called Dr. Horrible's Sing-Along Blog. And that was just fabulous. I loved it. I loved it. I loved it. It was better than 90% of the stuff that I think Hollywood produced this past year. It was inventive. It was funny. It was poignant. It was dramatic in places where it needed to be dramatic. And it was just completely original.
Yeah, I would actually have liked to have seen Dr. Horrible on the short film presentation. That was pretty good. I don't think I liked it as much as you did, but I can't say that you were wrong about the fact that it was incredibly creative, it was very funny, and it was very poignant, so I understand why you would want it there.
There were other good movies. I enjoyed Prince Caspian, I enjoyed Iron Man, I enjoyed Get Smart, I enjoyed Hancock, I enjoyed Speed Racer. They were all fun movies, but I didn't really consider them to be best worthy. When you present your best list, you should also present your worst list.
I'm ready to go here. I'm ready to go on this one. I saw this movie this year that had gunfights, car chases, and explosions in it. It had everything a good movie should have, except it also had Hayden Christian in it. Jumper. Not only is this the worst movie of 2008, this may be the worst movie of all time. I would put money on this against Plan 9 from Outer Space. I certainly give this the Edward D. Wood Jr. Award of the Year.
Jumper is confirmation that Hayden Christensen is a horrible actor and that Samuel L. Jackson is a Hollywood slut. He will star in anything if you give him a dollar.
Now, this movie would be my opposite movie of The Dark Knight. This is the one that I had the highest expectations for that fell far below anything I could ever have anticipated. Whereas the movie was not as bad as Jumper, the difference between what I expected and what I received is much greater. At least I didn't expect much with Jumper when I got nothing. I didn't expect to get kicked in the nads, but Jumper made an exception for me. At least Steven Spielberg let me wear a cup.
Oh. You've got to be referring to Indiana Jones and the Steaming Pile of Horse Manure, also known as the Kingdom of the Crystal Skulls.
That would be the movie.
Let's not confuse it, though, with Indiana Jones and the Flaming Pile of Dog Manure, a.k.a. the Temple of Doom.
It's so funny because here is a four-movie set with two brilliant movies and two movies which we would liken to excrement.
And have!
I loved Raiders of the Lost Ark and Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. Those are really incredible movies. And I know that Steven Spielberg has it in him to make a movie like The War of the Worlds. So you're worried that he can make another War of the Worlds, but know that he's capable of Jaws and E.T. and Raiders of the Lost Ark, and you know that the bulk of his career is making good movies. And yet, Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull was like putting a grocery bag full of horse manure and lighting it on fire and putting it in front of somebody's house.
It and Temple of Doom almost diminish how good Raiders of the Lost Ark and The Last Crusade really are by how bad they are.
I've seen all of the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles, which was toned down for television. It was an educational television show. It was not meant to be an action adventure the way the movies were. And the worst episode of that television show was better than any moment in Crystal Skull.
The only positive thing that I can say about Indiana Jones 4 is that it really makes me look forward to Indiana Jones 5.
Why? Because it can't get any worse?
It can't get any worse, and the odd numbers tend to work well for Indiana Jones, and I would really love for them to go out once again on a high note.
I would watch a 5 if it was another high note.
I am going to add The Spirit to this list, because it really was one of the worst films that I saw this year.
I've said it before, its real problem was making it a spirit movie. As a superhero movie, I found it to be pretty average. It was okay. It has all the points that you really need in a superhero movie. It's got his origin, how he became a superhero. It's got the arch nemesis. It's got the girls in distress. But again, as a superhero movie, it was mediocre. Not bad, not exceptional. In a year with three very good superhero films in it, it was certainly the bottom of the barrel. What really made this movie bad was the fact that you put on the name The Spirit, made it into an established comic book character, and then took away all the conventions that would make this comic book character the same except for his costume.
And then he added insult to injury by saying it was Will Eisner's The Spirit. It wasn't just The Spirit. It wasn't Frank Miller's attempt at doing a spirit film. He laid claim to channeling Will Eisner's vision of this character and failed miserably.
I agree with that. I just don't think it's one of the worst movies of the year. It's absolutely beyond the shadow of a doubt the worst comic book interpretation of all time, but as just a movie, this is a simple exercise in storytelling, it wasn't terrible.
Beyond horses that we've already beat to death, like The Reader being on this list, the last one that I would have to say hit my worst list was The Happening. Now, keep in mind, it was a mediocre film. It wasn't horrid. It wasn't the worst thing that Hollywood cranked out this year. It was mediocre, but it was really bad for M. Night Shyamalan. For the quality of film that we have grown to expect from this director, I felt as though it really failed miserably.
This actually surprises me a little bit to see it on your list. And I can understand it because we've already discussed the variation between my expectations of Indiana Jones and the reality of it. It sounds like you kind of feel like about the same about The Happening, like you had really high expectations going in and you were really surprised.
Exactly.
Because I know we saw it together and I remember laughing at things that nobody else in the audience was laughing at because we thought it was hilarious. So I'm surprised to see it on your worst of the year list. That being said, I don't disagree with you. It's certainly Shyamalan's worst film. He's capable of better. Had he either made it a B-movie, which he claims it's supposed to be, or if he had made it a horror movie and made it really scary, it would have succeeded in either of those categories. But trying to place it, like, right in between just caused no end to the misery of this movie.
He didn't go far enough for a gore fest, and he went too far from what his audience expect of him.
Yes, absolutely.
This past year was a year with a lot of films that I had wanted to see. A lot of films that we had high expectations for, some met them, some didn't. It's going to be interesting to see what happens with 2009. For me personally, there aren't as many films as in 2008 that really drew my attention and made me want to run out to the theaters.
I know you're going to be in the theaters on March 6th.
Oh yeah, we're going to be there March 6th, and we'll be here within the week giving you a Watchcast, talking about Watchmen. So make sure you tune in and join us then and hear what we have to say about the newest superhero movie.
Thank you for listening to TwerpCast. And as always, we'd like to hear your feedback. Please write jim@twerponline.net.
This has been a Time Well Electronic Recording production, copyright 2009. Thanks for joining us, everybody.
And the Oscar goes to...